C1A. Number 12A.
Now, on the Saturday as today, I always like to go over the main subjects to refresh our thoughts and to see the picture as a whole. We had many centuries ago a very good reformer in education called Pestalozzi. I don't know if you have heard of him. And his definition of teaching was to repeat the same thing 100 times. So, and I think there is a lot in it, that it is always good to go over the fundamental points over and over and over again. But one must see that each time one goes over it, that one goes over it with a fresh and a new and unpreconceived sense of it, and not in a sense of repeating and repeating the same thought. It must always be fresh, then it has the newness of life, and then it is not repetition. Let us see the purpose and the meaning of the chapter on prayer, viewed from the standpoint of the way of life. I think you may have heard the same question many years ago, and perhaps recently, that students may feel that when they have begun to study the synonyms and the days of creation and so on, that one or the other may say, I can't anymore work metaphysically in the old way, but I have some difficulty in working something out in the new way. And the same thing you may have heard about prayer, that people may have said, I can't anymore pray the way I used to pray in the evening when I was in bed, and before I went to sleep, I put all my trust and everything into the care of God. I can't pray anymore that way, but I can't pray yet the new way. And the transitionary stage is always an uneasy stage. And so let's see what this chapter on prayer may tell us. And if I say may tell us, I say it because to each one it comes in an individual, beautiful way. But fundamentally, what does it mean? I am always so struck by the way Mrs. Eddy introduces in the first subject already the whole fact of the nature of God. See, she doesn't start with a definition of God, and yet in the text she indicates in the first subject already the whole principle nature of God. It is that she takes what the Bible has taught us and takes that right at the beginning and presents us with the fact that mind knows already all. Then that every desire that goes out to this all-knowing mind, it has the nature of God as spirit, that it is being blessed, that spirit blesses. And then she gives the sense that God is soul, deity, unchangeable. Gives the sense that in God's universe, everything is fixed and definite, and that we don't have any fear that he changes. And then she gives us the sense that God is principle and is the principle of being, the signs of all beings. That this God is that God which governs every detail. Whatever we may go to him in our prayer, he is signs of all beings. And then she gives that beautiful, wonderful, vast, wide sense that God is life and that he is pouring forth more than we are willing to accept. He is already pouring forth more than we accept. And then she gives a sense of truth, that God is truth, and says, and that God is doing right. He is already doing right and will do right without being reminded of his providence. And lastly, she gives that wonderful sense that everything is complete, that God's work done, that there is not anything which has first to be created and established. See, what therefore is my prayer? Well, you see, that's the sign of prayer. That it isn't that I don't get the sense of begging to a God, of pleading to a God, of asking something from a God, of approaching an unknown God. It is that wonderful bigness and presence and unchangeability which we found in that first subject, which says, well, God is what? Is the all-knowing mind, is already blessing, is unchangeable and doesn't change, is that science and government of all being which governs every detail, is already now at this very moment pouring forth more than what we accept, is already now doing the right thing, and we don't have to remind him of doing the right thing. And God is already a fulfilled fact, and his work is done. And so my prayer in the first subject just reaches out for that. It is that unspoken desire and thought which says, oh yes, I want to seek that and see that and put and have my vision on that. That's my big vision of the presence and of the infinitude of God. And so I begin to pray. That's already prayer. That wonderful sense of just seeing that bigness, just marveling at that bigness, of seeking to hold fast in thought to that infinitude of God. And then, shall I stop there? Then the text goes a step further to the second subject and says, yes, but that vision of that infinite being, that I must love and adore with all my heart, with my best spiritual qualities. I must be grateful, and I can be grateful, and I just cannot help being grateful for knowing this fact, for seeing the bigness of God. And something in me begins to wake up in the sense of an enormous gratitude for the fact that God is, for the fact that God is already knowing all. A gratitude and love for the fact that God is already blessing all. So a love and a gratitude and an adoration for the fact that God is unchangeable and doesn't change. That it's a gratitude and a love and an expression of my whole inward adoration and affection for the fact that God is already governing all, is already pouring forth more than what I accept, is already doing the right thing in whatever the problem may be, has already an established solution of the problem which may trouble me. See, it's the standing in that second subject, just something lovely and of the sense of gratitude and affection to these facts grow in our thought. And it's a constant capacity to love those facts which are presented in the first subject. And then something in me, when I just adore these facts, when I begin to feel the love for the presence of God, for the rightness of God, for the fulfilled facts of God, then something in us, we can't help, it says, all right, and that's the way I'm going to work out my problem. I'm not going to accept another way. And I come to the third subject, which says, all right, that's the rule to work it out. That's the rule of reforming the problem into a blessing. And I'm going to hold fast with all my sincerity to this way. And I'm not going to let anything interfere in letting things be solved in that way. And I guess that third tone, it wakes up in one's being, in one's spiritual sense, which says, I'm not going to speculate in any other way on God. I'm not going to speculate in any way that God will solve this problem in another way than in that divine scientific way which has been presented. And so I get some sense of certainty, of definiteness in me, which gives me the necessary calm and the necessary spiritual exaltation. Something strong in me which becomes definite and which doesn't waver. And then we have seen how she goes further to the fourth subject and says, but be clear that this attitude is an attitude which we shouldn't take just here and then, just postmatically. It's an attitude which should prevail, must prevail, our every phase of being. And you remember that fourth prayer which says, yes, that attitude must be a principled attitude, which must pervade and sound through every phase of our attitude, through the phase of what we think about God, how we feel about God, through action, through our life, through our motives, through everything. It is that point where, such an important point, where she shows that this prayerful attitude must be a principled attitude which sounds through every phase of our being. It isn't an attitude which just goes on in our thinking, which just can prevail in our thinking, that we are just satisfied by saying, I was thinking right about this and that. It's more than that, you see. It says, no, it must pervade not only our thinking, not only our words, not only our feelings, not only our actions, but also our life, our whole motives, our whole life attitude, and so on. Then it becomes a whole prayer, a prayer which just pervades through our whole being. And then she goes further to the fifth subject and says, yes, and that principled attitude must be an attitude of pure, exalted spiritual understanding. It mustn't just be belief, a firm belief or a holy belief. You remember that fifth subject was dealing with the question, do we want that God works out the problem through our belief in a God, through belief, through faith in God, through blind faith or holy faith in God? Or is it an attitude which is deep root, which has that depth of life devotion in it, that wonderful, firm, exalted understanding of what God is? And she says, only if this principled attitude is woven through by that exalted understanding, that then it brings the fruits of God and not the fruits of our own beliefs. I think that fifth prayer is one of the most important, a crucial point, because we are so apt to believe, either sentimentally or blindly or religiously or in any way, to have that blind, holy belief in a God who is good. And we think that's it. And here the fifth prayer shows that we must be careful, because she says a belief brings only the effect of a belief. The belief never brings the effect of God. And the belief in God never brings the effect of God. It always brings the effect of our belief in God. And it's still our and not God. So what she asks there in that fifth subject, you remember, there are all those wonderful deep qualities of life, of cherishing the desire, of laboring for the desire, of being earnest about the desire, and not to be superficial about the depth of life. And then she says, all right, but when the winds blow, can you stand? And do you stand? When the arguments of sinful sense and of material sense speak against it, what are you going to do? And so she comes to that sixth subject where she says, truth asks us that yea-yea and that nay-nay, that yea-yea which affirms what spiritual sense has told us to be true, and is that nay-nay which is rebuking, denying, refuting, silencing what material sense wants us to tell. So we have that wonderful sixth, that strong sixth subject of truth, where she says, all right, all that what you have now up to this point made your whole, keep it, claim it. Don't let it slip out of your consciousness. Keep it into your consciousness. Go into that consciousness. Go into that sanctuary of spirit and close the door. Don't let any argument against this wonderful, wonderful order of prayer, this wonderful consistency of prayer. Don't let anything come in. Keep it closed in your sanctuary of spirit. And deny sinful things. And affirm spiritual things. And the fact of spirit. It's a necessary step. Because when we come to truth, we always will have to give proof of our uncompromising attitude, where we always have to use the sword of truth to make a definite and final separation. So it always demands that whole manhood of truth, that whole manhood of pure spiritual consciousness stands for what is true, and with all its inward strength and its inward power denies the claims of evil. Then, when that is done, when the sword of truth has done its job, then we feel we have no more truth. We have no more a problem. We have no more God and a problem. Then a sense comes into consciousness, into that spiritual consciousness, which says, all right, and all there is going on is God. And so that seventh subject give us that sense of the adoration of God, of that sense that we just can put all our trust fully and finally and completely and in every way to God's care. That's the seventh, where we have no more two before us, where everything is resolved into the one, where we have only one Father, our Father, which is Mother God, which is the only adorable one, whose kingdom is actually come, and whose will is being done in heaven and on earth, everywhere, in every detail, in every respect, and where we feel that this fact is always renewing and feeding our affection anew and anew, where we feel that that is going on and always feeding and renewing and regenerating our wonderful adoration for that one Father, that adorable one which is come and which is governing. And that brings us to the point where we just see in truth that the whole universe is just resounding and bringing back, reflecting back the facts of truth. There is no more a universe of duality. Love is reflected in love and in nothing else. And the whole universe resounds the facts of God for that one big plan to save us. And God leads us not into temptation, but He does deliver us. And He does deliver us from everything, from sin, sickness, and death. And that's the only fact that's going on. Well, that's something that goes on in consciousness. See, that's the prayer that goes on not in 5 minutes. That goes on not in the evening or in the morning when we make our prayer. Prayer is an attitude. It's a life attitude. Prayer is not saying a prayer. Prayer is not thinking a prayer. Prayer is a whole life attitude. And so our life really must be one big prayer. If we come to that point, we have reached a big point. We have reached something where we have somehow, in some measure, got to that standpoint, that attitude, where we just feel that every phase of our daily life, every phase of our longing and desiring and striving is all one big prayer to God. That's the scriptural note. Scriptural note, that's prayer. When something in us has that attitude of mind, spirit, soul, the world is the world, where it has that attitude in us, where there is just one big longing and desiring to know God as He is, and as spirit, that one desire and deep longing is coupled with that quality of spirit which is willing to try for it, to work for it, to labor for it, to put something into the scale. For what? That it may be done, and that it becomes definite. And every time we experience that, that's one, two, three, every time. Every time something in us begins to long, to desire, to know God as he is. And if that desire is genuine and just is always awake in oneself, just always there, and it's just always there and says, I would like to know. Oh, I can know God. And if that desire is coupled with that fear, with that tone of the second day of spirit, with laboring for it, with working for it, with striving for it, see those spiritual, substantial qualities, coupled with a tremendous love for it, then every time, something begins to speak in us. Get an arm. Something begins to speak in us. So, we become the representative of the divine. The representative in us begins to talk to us in a spiritual way. Spiritual sense begins to move in that consciousness, which is nurtured by that longing and by that striving. And then it begins to speak to us. And so prayer is on, and it will be done. It becomes an answer. You see, we have seen, for instance, that only that in us, which is of the nature of God, can pray. Not lack, not the sense of lack, not the sense of irritation or a sense of ignorance or a sense of not knowing what is the answer. That cannot pray to God. Only that which is of the nature of the divine mind can pray to the divine mind. Mind only knows itself. So only that in us as mind can pray to mind which is of the nature of mind. Here, the first touch of it is desire, seeking, longing. It is the unspoken desire. It is that desire which is unpreconceived, which is completely open for the mind, the divine mind, to speak in us, to have the representative in us. It is that unspoken thought and desire which is willing to put out of one's mind our own concept, our own wishes, our own representative, and is willing that soul's representative has a place in us. Now, mind comes to us here in the touch, in the hue, in the first touch of desire. But desire is more than just desire. Desire is a touch of mind, divine mind. And so that desire has in itself all the qualities of mind. It isn't just a tiny little thing. It is an aspect of mind, but being an aspect of mind, it's one with mind and therefore has the whole of mind. It's creative, it's productive, it's active. There is nothing more creative than a pure desire. A pure desire just sets everything in motion. It's active. A pure desire sets everything in motion and you just can't hold it back. It has power. You can't hold it back. It has power. That desire is striving towards its fulfillment. It has law. And so we see in every one of these subjects, we see that we are not touching a little bit of mind. We are touching, through the first prayer, the whole of mind. But through its aspect as the word of the word, which here is longing, seeking, desiring to know God as he is.